For the next several hours, we are going to be talking with a world-renowned psychic healer, spiritual teacher. Stand by for Vincent Jenna on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Looking forward to this tonight. Vincent Jenna is a world-renowned psychic healer, as I mentioned, spiritual teacher, receives and deciphers messages from the other side. And for the fast 31-plus years, he has dedicated all his talents to inspire all kinds of folks to believe in themselves so they can use this incredible gift to fulfill dreams, their dreams. He is heard regularly on national programs, and here he is, and I believe, Vincent, first time here on Coast to Coast, is it not?
Yes, it is, and thank you so much for having me on your show. We crossed paths back in California, you know, and we didn't even know it at the time.
Exactly. Well, I'm glad you're with us. I'm looking forward to this. I just hear so many great things about you, and good for you.
Well, thank you, and likewise, what an incredible show you put out here. I'm going to have to start staying up in the morning and listen to you.
Or podcast it, like some people do, and then they sneak it into their office and listen. Their boss thinks they're doing some work, and they've got their little headset in and a little earpiece, and they're doing their thing. Anyways, how did this happen for you? How did you become psychic? Of course, you know, we're born this way, but what magnified it for you?
What magnified it for me was a tidal wave. It was a tidal wave of past abuse that I had been through when I was younger. And there was this one guy who was the antagonizer. And at my high school reunion, that antagonizer became a dear friend of mine. I had just done a movie that was released, and all the fame about the movie was Grease. I was a professional actor and singer. And I went back to my reunion. He became a friend of mine. And during the time that we were first friends, his life was very distressed. It was falling apart on him, and there was nobody to help him, and he wasn't turning to anybody, and I didn't know how to help him myself. He was one of those guys that would hide everything and say, oh, yeah, life is fantastic. Everything is going great. My wife, my job, all of this. And so one day after a visit, I literally was in tears and didn't know. I just felt so hopeless and helpless in helping him. So I made a cry out, as some of us do when we're desperate. You know, my wife was with me, and I said, God, you just got to help me help this guy. And it happened within weeks of that cry, George. It was just like a Steven Spielberg, Cecil B. DeMille movie. It just came over me. I started seeing dead people. I started hearing all this information and ancient wisdom that I had no idea about. And it just hit me, you know. And all of a sudden, there I am. I was an actor. And now I am psychic. I'm reading the future. I'm just knowing it, and that's where it began. And I was 28 at the time.
Now, did he recollect being that kind of person to you during the earlier days? Did he remember all the bad things he did to you?
Oh, yeah, he did. Oh, and at that reunion is when they reminded me. And each reunion since, they wound up dedicating the reunion to me, all the kids, because they felt so bad how they treated me. And I automatically had forgiven all of them. It wasn't even a question. And because I became a spiritual teacher, I was even excusing and telling them why they had acted that way because of their own past. And because of their treatment of me, that's what led me to the work that I'm doing today. So I can't be angry with them. So it's been fabulous. They're some of my greatest followers on my Facebook page today and around the country.
That's fantastic. Were you also in the movie Iborgs? Was that you?
Yes, that was me. I can't believe it. That was very funny that you mentioned that. One of those B flicks, but but yes, that was me. I was the inspector or the detective, and it was from the couple of years ago that I had even done that. Where did you find that? It's not even out so easily.
I have sources everywhere,
yes,
Vincent.
Yes, you do. Yes, I was.
Are you still acting, or are you primarily just doing the psychic work now?
Now I'm doing the psychic work, and I'm so busy traveling all around the country and doing readings worldwide, I don't have time to do acting anymore. But I'm a one-man show now, George. You know, when I'm on stage and I'm trying to reach people, I use all my past experience. I play songs, I have dance, I sing even at them just so that I can reach them, you know. So I'm using all of that today.
We've got to get you on some of my live events that I do around the country. We've got to get you to pop in on some of them.
Oh, I would love to pop in.
We'll have Tom work on that with you. So now you, by the way, I was just at the International Remote Viewing Association conference a couple weeks ago in Vegas and ran into someone you know, Evan Alexander.
Oh, yes. I'm going to be speaking with him at the Association for Research Enlightenment in Virginia Beach.
Ah, the Edgar Casey Group. Okay.
The Edgar Casey Group. And let me tell you, that in itself, it's one of the reasons why I teach what I teach, because the remarkable things that happen in life, and it's a complete circle and things go around. When I had my download, shall we say, or my spiritual awakening, I was immediately guided to the Edgar Casey material. I had no idea who he was. I mean, I was more interested in the James Dean material. You know, I was a professional actor wanting to win an Academy Award. And so I started to study the Edgar Casey material, go to the ARE, take several classes. We even started, my wife and I started to mediate and hold In Search of God study groups from the ARE. Oh. And now here I am, several years later, I'm going to be one of their teachers for an entire weekend event there. And I'm thrilled that they invited me, and they asked me to write an article for the Venture Inward magazine that I lived by. If it wasn't for ARE, George, they really gave me the foundation, the core foundation, to understand what I was going through and then how to use it. So, I mean, I owe them a lot, and I was so appreciative of them.
Well, that's great. They're great people, Vincent. And Edgar Casey, I have been enamored with since I was a little boy. I started picking up a few of his books, and once I got into what he did, I mean, I was obsessed with what he did. I mean,
wow. You are so lucky that you were able to tap into that at such a young age. I was very deprived. I'm a recovering Catholic, and so I was raised very strictly back in New York, and I'm an Italian as well. And so, you know, Italian boys become altar boys and things like that. And so spirituality, I was a complete virgin to that. I didn't know any of it until it hit me in the head. At 28 years old. So you can imagine how I felt not knowing any of this stuff, not even hearing about it. And now I lived in California, and after I did the movie Grease, we stayed there. But I wasn't into that crowd. I didn't even know Coast to Coast existed or anything like it. The metaphysics, forget it, until it happened to me. And then, so that's why, you know, my wife, when she experienced that with me, she didn't know whether to call the local rabbi or the priest to have me exorcised or Bellevue to lock me up. She had no idea what was going on, neither did I. So it was just like a whirlwind. Now when I look back, I realize everything went according to the greater plan for what I was meant to do.
You must love it, too. You must just absolutely love it.
George, you are on for how many hours every night doing your show?
Four hours every night.
And that means you must love what you're doing, too. See, that's what I try to teach people. When you love and you're passionate about the work that you're doing, you don't care when you work it, how long you work it. It's fun. It feeds you. Yes, it feeds me, George. It's unbelievable. It feeds me.
Yeah, same with me. I mean, for example, we go live on holidays. No pre-tapes for us. A lot of talk show hosts will do that. They want to be with their family. That's fine. But, you know, I made a decision years ago when I started doing this program, Vincent, that, you know, we were going to do live programs on holidays, because I think holidays are the single most important days for people who are lonely and don't have families, that they must have some connection. And wow. So we do that. And there are many that, like, I'll be back in St. Louis for Thanksgiving with my family. And, you know, I invite a lot of people who don't have family members to my place there. But afterwards, when it's done, they all know George has got to leave. He's on the air this Thanksgiving night. and off I go into the sunset to get ready to do the show. But that's what we do. So I share with you that kind of passion that you have, and I got to come to one of your events just to watch you do what you do. I bet it's fascinating.
Oh, well, you know what? I'm going to be in L.A. on July 26th doing an event of my own, so you're more than welcome to come on. You're consider yourself an invited guest, so I'd love to have you there.
I may be here. I may have to be in Denver that weekend. What day is that?
It's Saturday.
I'm in Denver.
You're in Denver. Okay. Well, you know what? You'll get it remotely. I'll be back in L.A. again.
We'll have
a great fan base there.
Absolutely. So now tell me a little bit more about your work with the Edgar Cayce Foundation. What are you going to be doing then?
Well, it's all about connecting to the other side. So, of course, Eben is there. There are a few other people, and we're going to be talking about the messages that we do receive, how that relates to helping every individual. Why do we connect? Why do we care about the other side? We're here on this side, the living. And I'm also going to be doing some readings, gallery readings, to transfer and give those messages out. See, I'm all about the message. I'm not about impressing people with the fact that I can talk to dead Uncle George. You know, it's wonderful. I feel that there is an absolute purpose for mediumship, for closure. A lot of people don't understand the other side, and that's what that weekend is about. We get this concept from religions, especially like the Christian religion, that once you leave here, you go to heaven, everything is perfect. Well, the message was told that the kingdom of God is here within you. And so if it's within you and it's not a place, and that's actually what I'm going to be speaking about there, then it has nothing to do with how wonderful the place is. It's more to do with how wonderful you make it. And so we'll be teaching people that just because you die and you're in that other place, not everything is hunky-dory over there. If you couldn't make it hunky-dory over here, you're probably doing a little hurting over there as well. And so a lot of times in my mediumship, I am reconnecting people. I am connecting mom who didn't get a chance to say I loved you enough, or dad who abandoned you, or just you didn't even get a chance to meet him, and he's coming back to try to finish up something so he can have some balance over there and peace over there, the same way as he wants you to have peace over here. So that's what the whole weekend is about, and I'm so excited about it because it happens to be one of their sellout events. So it'll be really exciting.
Now, do you believe in a hell or not?
Yes, and we're living it all the time. I was listening to your show earlier, and we're talking about those protective grids.
Yes.
You know, there's no more hell than what we put ourselves through over here when we're not acting as the beings that we were meant to be. We're magnificent. We're loving. We're peaceful. We're compassionate. And when you don't live that way, you are living hell. And so, yes, hell is a state of mind. It is not a place.
That's a good point. By the way, our research into your work is so spot on. I don't know whether to call you Vincent or Vinny.
You know what, George? You can call me anything you want. That old adage said, just as long as you don't call me late for dinner.
Yeah.
I grew up with Vinny. But Vinny always gave when I moved to North Carolina, it was the funniest thing. I came here and I was continuing my education and completing my master's in social work as an adult. And here I am in North Carolina, and I'm in the classes, and nobody would talk with me. At the beginning of the semesters, here I am, and I'm an adult, and everybody was avoiding me. And then finally, at the end of the semester, we had some kids coming up to me and turning around and saying, you know what? You know, for a Vinny, you're a really nice guy. And I'm like, wait a minute, what did you think? I was packing it or something? You know, just because I come from New York and my name is Vinny doesn't mean that I'm going to, you know, I've got a gun over here. And you give me a hard time, I'm going to call Uncle Nunzio or blow your head off. That's exactly what they thought. So when I became a professional psychic and a psychotherapist, I went back to Vincent. Because Vincent didn't give the same image. It didn't make you think of an Italian walking down the streets of New York with a wife beater on and spaghetti sauce on it. You know what I mean?
I love it. Yeah.
I love it. So I had to change it.
When you made this switch for yourself, how did you dig down deep within yourself to forgive these people who did you harm, who tormented you, who did these things? How'd you do that? It's not easy.
Well, I know it's not easy. And the funny thing about that, George, as you're asking me that question, I'm reliving it. I'm trying to think in my head the exact process that occurred. When I had that awakening within me, even before that, I tried to examine how much I might have hated these people. And I couldn't. I couldn't hate them. I couldn't hate them because I looked at them and I saw what they were going through. I saw and knew that the kids who were beating me up, they were at home getting beat up by their alcoholic parents or not having parents at all, and they were coming into school and started beating me up. Now, at the time I was going through that, obviously I didn't know that. And don't get me wrong, it scarred me, and it's a scar that I'm still working on today. It's the I'm not good enough scar, and I hear it all the time. But once I became older, I looked back at them, and there was just compassion in my heart from the very get-go. Yeah, I had attitude. That first reunion I went to, it was a couple of months after the movie Grease was released, okay, with John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John. And there was this
That was in 78, right?
Yep, perfect, 1978. That's exactly
what
it was.
I love that movie.
Everybody does, including now my grandchildren. It's like, it's unbelievable, but it was that movie. George, if it wasn't for the fame of that movie, nobody would have cared that I was even in it. I wasn't a star in it. Yes, I was more in the background, but even though Alan Carr made me the producer, he gave me a featured dancer role so that I can get my union card and stuff. But there was a big press and big to-do in the small town that I came from, Levittown, New York. And so the buzz was going all the way until my 10-year high school reunion. So we just moved back from California to New York. I got on my best suit, pulled up my britches, and I went into that reunion, chip on my shoulder and everything. I'm going to show them how successful I was. I was 22 years old when I did that movie and when I had my reunion. And I walked in there, and granted, because I was in that movie and something famous, there was an automatic awe of the fact that Vinny's here. Oh, my God. I didn't think he'd come back. And the kid, that same kid who was my antagonizer, from across the room yelled my name. Well, we were in a big hall. We were a class of 350, and
that's
almost
a
everybody
good size.
Showed up.
Yeah,
yeah, it is,
big,
right?
Big graduating class.
Especially in a small town.
Yeah.
And so he yells my name, comes running across the dance floor. Everybody is looking. He grabbed me and hugged me, and he wouldn't let me go.
Did you know who he was right away?
Right. Oh, the voice, because that's how he used to get the antagonizing going.
Did you think he was going to come up and swing at you or something?
No, not at all. I didn't know what he was going to do. I thought it was going to be like make fun of me, but I had my head held high. I didn't care. Go ahead. You go to make fun of me. I'm doing fine. I got my wife here. I'm happy. But it wasn't that. The energy in the room was more of disbelief that I had shown up. And that's when he became my friend. He sat by my side through most of the evening. He kept bringing his jock buddies who used to beat me up at my table.
Oh, my gosh.
They were apologizing to me. The girls would surround me. I had girls picking on me, too. They didn't know me, but they picked on me.
What a turnaround.
It was a complete turnaround. And then that's why I'm saying he became one of my closest friends. And everybody was surprised about that, including myself. I had nothing in common with this guy. I was not, George, I wasn't an athlete. I was more of an athletic supporter. Because I was the guy who was beat up and picked on and the last to be chosen for all the teams, even though I was a good athlete.
Were you good in school? Were you the geek in school?
I wasn't the geek. I wasn't the guy with the glasses.
And the pens
the,
in
the
your pocket.
And the yeah. pen. No, what it was.
Hold on for a second, Vincent. We're going to hit this break and come back with more. Welcome back to Coast, Vincent Jenna with us. His website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. www.thebigbrainfellowship.com. So you had this ability to forgive and forget. And I think that's admirable. Do you think that's critical to your abilities?
It's critical to my abilities. And more important, George, it's critical to everyone's lives. You can't create the life you want without forgiveness. And it's more of forgiveness of yourself than it is of other people, because we blamed ourselves as children for everything that went wrong in our lives. It's a natural thing to do because we're egocentric. We can't think outside of the box. We think the world revolves around us. So when mom and dad hit us or reprimand us, that's the obvious self-blame. But we also blame ourselves when mom and dad are having an argument. If dad leaves, if mom and dad are sick or a brother dies, we blame ourselves for all of that. Now, that pattern absolutely continues, which is part of what my workshop is about, that I tour the country with. And so when people start mistreating us in our adult lives, we think it's them we're angered with, but it actually pushes the button and the pattern of, it must be me. Our anger towards them is actually a defense mechanism. So forgiveness is vital. It's vital to life. It's vital to evolution and evolving as a soul and an individual. So yes, the answer is yes.
See, how far do you take forgiveness? I mean, I guess I could forgive the bully in school that you did. I guess I could forgive someone who injured a family member accidentally, or if they were drunk, because I think they would have had a problem. I'm not sure, Vincent, I can forgive the murderer who went out and killed someone, a loved one or somebody like that. That I don't think I can forgive.
I understand. Well, let me give you and your listeners a little story here.
All right.
And I'm going to share, her name is Scarlett Lewis. She is the mother of one of the children who was killed at the Sandy Hook shooting in Connecticut. She travels the country now knowing that this entire thing was set up by her son and the children so that she could teach Choose Love. As a matter of fact, I met her in person. We actually worked at an event together, and she brought pictures with her that her son Jesse, the 6-year-old, left prior to the shooting. And one of them was a picture that he had drawn in school of him as an angel standing next to a bad guy. The bad guy was standing there, stick figure, and his face was blacked out, and it was blacked out below his face with this drawing in that blackout, and he had a gun in his hand.
Oh, boy.
He drew that before. That picture was examined by some psychiatrists and some anthropologists, and they said in that box that he drew at the bottom was a symbol that meant sacrifice from ancient days. What Jesse was trying to say is that this kid, Adam, who came into the class to shoot up the kids, he was the sacrifice. He was the one that people were going to hate in order to get the message that we needed. The same story as Judas from the Bible.
Yep.
Everybody
yep.
hated Judas for, right, betraying Jesus. But someone had to go along with the plan. And I know it's a hard concept for us to believe. So that's on a spiritual level of understanding. That some of this is chosen. But let's talk about the physical, human level. In order for someone to cause that type of hurt to someone else, they have to be hurting so badly themselves. Otherwise, they would never lash out at their brothers or sisters. Hitler, the story of Hitler, he was sexually abused by his mother and father until he was 13 years old. That guy wasn't trying to.
Yeah, I mean, he was screwed up from the get-go.
Right. He was trying to conquer himself, George. He wasn't trying to conquer anybody else. Osama bin Laden was sibling 51. Can you imagine nighttime at Osama's tent with his mom and dad going down the line? Okay, good night, John Boy. Good night, Akeem. Good night. Oh, forget it.
You'd forget about Osama. Sure.
Right.
But,
he never experienced
but,
love.
But I got to tell you, Vincent, that's not an excuse to do what they've done.
No, you are absolutely right. And that's why we're supposed to change it. But what it does, it goes from us hating them and standing against them to having compassion for them and standing for the right way to act, for a different way. You can only change and rehabilitate when you're for them, not against them. Otherwise, you have the same old system that we have today that isn't working. And it's based on retribution, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, rather than restitution, believing that we made lower choices. And that's how we need to help. So compassion in our heart doesn't keep us. Look, Gandhi had compassion. Martin Luther King had compassion. That's why they didn't fight anybody to get what they needed. They stood for equality. They stood for love. They stood for compassion. They stood for believing in yourself. And that's why they were able to stand there and be beaten and be hurt, but they never once lashed out.
No.
That's what
not.
We need to change.
Now, with this gift that you have, what would you say your expertise is in? Healing, knowing things psychically, intuition, what would it be?
Yes.
All of it.
All of the above. No. Okay, I'll tell you what my greatest gift is, George. I see a person's gifts better than they do. That's my greatest gift. I see the blockage, and I see the solutions. I guess that's why I'm referred to as the solutions psychic. I see from the thousands of readings that I have done from all over the world, whether they be by phone, whether they be by someone sitting in front of me, I can see you and your gifts better than you ever had. And I get you to see yourself through my eyes momentarily so that you can see what I see. And when a person does that, when a person knows somebody believes in them, that's when the healing takes place. That, to me, is what's meant by one man can save a nation. So, yes, I can speak. I'm a great entertainer. I can make you laugh. I dance on the stage. I sing, yada, 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 all of that. But more importantly, I empower you to believe in yourself. And that, to me, is my greatest gift. Thank you for asking.
How difficult is it to make someone believe in themselves?
Well, actually, it's easier to get alienship in the United States than it is to get somebody to believe themselves.
I would bet that.
All right. You know why? Because people don't believe what they think they believe. Not most people. Their adult defense mechanisms take over, and it's convincing them, oh, I'm good. I'm a good person. Oh, yeah, I believe that I can manifest my own life. Oh, yeah, I believe I deserve a good job. No, you don't. You're BSing yourself. You don't believe that. Otherwise, you would have one. Our creating abilities, which were set up since the beginning of our creation, we were told through the law of attraction, the law of manifesting, these natural laws are there whether we use them or not, just like the law of gravity. It's natural, it's automatic, and we create our lives based on what we believe. So if you're not seeing the life you want, if you don't have the job you want, if you don't have the finances you want, if you're ill, if you're not in the relationships you want, it's because that's what you're committed to, that's what you believe, but you don't know it. That's what we have to start waking up with people, is their understanding of what they really believe inside. And so, yes, I sit here, and regionally and culturally, that also interferes in being able to break through to them. It's so funny. You're on the East Coast there. I'm sorry, the West
I'm
Coast.
I'm on the
I'm
West,
from,
yeah.
Yeah, you're on the West. I'm from the East. It is so hard breaking through another New Yorker, you know, than it is a Californian. And the reason why is because of environmentally, the way we were raised in the New York area. It was very hard. We have very strong defense mechanisms. We survive. And so breaking through that shell of you don't love yourself. You just don't love yourself. As a matter of fact, you think you're a piece of garbage. And to try to convince them of that, it's like, oh, no, man, yeah, until... Yeah, I do. And then all of a sudden the light bulb goes off and they go, oh, my gosh, wow. And then things change for them when that happens. Yeah, it is a hard job. But you know, you try to do that. You try to show some people some new information and they're sitting there fighting it tooth and nail because they just don't want to believe. They're afraid to believe.
Now, the work that you do, let's say like the psychic readings, Do you tell them what they need to know, or do they ask you what they want to know?
No. When they come and sit in front of me, I tell them, don't expect the reading like you would get from others.
Okay.
I don't care if you're meant to buy a Cadillac next week, and I don't care if a lover is coming into your life for the first time. What I care about is you receiving the message you need to hear, and it can be very intense. Actually, my readings are 20 years of psychotherapy in 1 hour. That's what I tell them.
That is compressed and amazing.
It is compressed, but it's intense. And if you're sitting in front of me, that means your soul guided you to me. And if your soul guided you to me, then that means that you're ready. You're ready for the big leap of your life. And if you think about it, George, with all the work you're doing and the work that I'm doing, the hand-holding, the coddling, that was several years ago. That was to get people to an understanding of metaphysics and spirituality and broaden their understanding of it. So they were coddled and nurtured there. Well, now that we're there, we can't handhold the same way anymore. I actually stopped being a psychotherapist because as a psychotherapist, you can't give your client the answer because you're taught by all the experts that them coming up with the answer themselves is so much more valuable. Okay. Well, that's why people are going to 10, 20, and 30 years of psychotherapy since they're kids, because they're waiting to come to that answer. I switched over. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, though. And I'm not talking against psychotherapy.
No,
I respect them, and it's absolutely necessary for some people.
And it works for some people.
Absolutely. It totally works. It keeps people from committing suicide. But as a spiritual teacher and a psychic medium, I see the answer, I give it to them. It still has to become theirs by accepting it. They still have to do the work, but the difference is the door opens so much quicker when you turn around and you tell them, okay, here you go, 4 years old, when your dad left, that's what caused your first scar, that's one of the things that's getting in the way today, and one of the reasons why you have bad relationships with men. When you go right there, now their work is about accepting that and doing the healing work. It's not about, well, let me see why. Let's get rid of the whys. We know the whys. Let's work on what it caused. And so the work is completely different. It's like when you go to the doctor, okay, you don't want to keep going week after week and you decide what the problem is. Well, no, you go there to get the answer. And why do you want the answer? So that you can treat it, heal it, move on
exactly.
with your life.
Strangely, though, Vincent, some people don't go to a doctor for that very reason. They don't want the answer. And I find that to be just mind-boggling. I mean, I've talked to people, and I say, look, you're not feeling well. Go to the doctor. He's, no, I'm not going. Why? Because I'm afraid of what he's going to tell me.
Right.
That's why you go.
Is that I know, George, I have the exact same problem. You know what's even worse than that? A person who stays in depression and know that they're depressed but doesn't want to change. And the reason why that happens, George, is because we become expert survivors in life. We don't know how to live. We survive. And part of surviving, just like if we were out in the desert and we stay there, you know, we learn how to eat the foods that we can get. We learn how to capture water in order to give us liquid. People hold on to their depression because they know how to live with that. They know how to be unhappy. They know how to live without going after their dreams. They're used to it. And because they're used to it, they stay there and they choose to stay there. So the only reason why I can share this is no one is listening to it. I have a relative right now who's slowly dying. He's been told what he's got. He's got a million and one things going on. He doesn't take care of it. He ignores it, and it's getting worse, and he is dying. Now, he feels himself and knows he's dying. He turns around and he says to me, well, tomorrow I might not wake up in the morning, and I'm still sitting there going, are you crazy? Are you insane? Actually, yes.
Yeah, you would think so.
Yes, when you choose to stay in that unhappy place, in that miserable place, it's because you're so fearful of finding out that you didn't have to. And so you'd go through a whole lifetime subconsciously ignoring and denying intentionally. Denial is a defense mechanism, but it's a defense mechanism for a reason. My mother got Alzheimer's, and this is what I believe. I did a lot of research while I was a psychotherapist. Alzheimer's, I discovered, is not as much of a disease as it is a defense mechanism. Everyone that I researched that had Alzheimer's had a miserable childhood.
Really? That's
yes, absolutely. So think about this. Your body has a million and one defense mechanisms. So when you get an illness, your temperature goes up because bacteria and viruses cannot live in high temperature.
I mean, believe it or not, a fever is good.
It is a fever.
To fight the infection.
And we pass out and to lay down in order to gain more oxygen. So passing out is good, all right? Except if you hit your head while you're passing out.
That's right, yeah.
All right. What does the brain and mind do when all its memories are painful? Because it takes care of itself during emotional pain just as well as it takes care of itself during physical illnesses.
I would think it tries to erase it.
It tries, and how do you think it erases the memories? By forgetting them. Isn't it amazing that the first area Alzheimer's attacks, if it is a disease, if it is a brain-dying piece, why isn't it random? Why does it focus first on the memories, first on the tools that bring forth the memories? My mother was sexually abused by her brother until she was 13 years old. That's why she was an abuser of me. Well, when she was in her 80s and she developed Alzheimer's, what do people in there as seniors do anyway? They reminisce all day long. All of a sudden, she started developing Alzheimer's. She forgot how she used to beat the crap out of my brother and I. She forgot that she was abused. She forgot her entire past. How convenient.
If she remembered it, she'd probably go over the edge.
Totally over the edge. Now, it was painful for her to forget, but the pain of forgetting was less than the pain of remembering. So our brains do those things intentionally in order to protect us. So, you know, that's why we make the choices that we make, because we're trying to protect us from our own self-pains.
That it's amazing that you were able to discover this. I'm going to pass that on to some of our researchers. I just did a story on Alzheimer's disease last week, and you know that's one facet they never even thought of, and that is
I don't know they don't when well the science never looks back like that
they don't go back that far.
No, they don't, and they separate things, but. I watched my parents, both of them. You know, we would sit down at dinner time, and my father would recall, he had dementia, and he would recall stories of some family. It wasn't mine, and I used to laugh, and my wife and I would be laughing because he had us traveling all over the world. We never left our house because Mom was so paranoid, but yet he traveled. He never raised a hand to us. He used to beat us all the time with the belt. He never remembered that. But I let him remember what he wanted to remember. I actually built a house to move my parents in with me, though they were tormented. So this forgiveness thing can really make a difference. Once you heal your life, I'm not saying I'm perfectly healed. I still have that voice that says I'm not good enough, right? But once you can forgive...
Yeah, but it drives you. That voice keeps pushing you, doesn't it?
It does, as long as I follow it up with, no, you are good enough, keep going. And that's the difference between my work and what I try to have other people recognize. We come into the world, we're going to have a story. Our stories create scars. No matter what the intensity is or the mildness of it, it still creates some type of scar. Maybe it's the carrot that we've chosen to dangle in front of us to motivate us, like you said. Okay, but we have to remember and hear that scar, because so many people's scars are so hidden, they would rather blame the world. They would rather blame their boss as to why they are not getting ahead. They would rather blame their partners and their spouses as to why they have miserable relationships. And they would rather blame biology as to why they're sick, rather than say, it's me, it's in my hands.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take this quick break, all Vincent, right. Then we're going to come back. 2 hours to go with you, the last hour. We'll take phone calls.